Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage takes the frustrations out of getting a mortgage by letting you safely share your financial information with the touch of a button. Get approved online in minutes at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you this week from Cleveland and the Republican National Convention. It is official. Donald Trump is the Republican nominee for president. In the hall last night, delegates heard from the Trump kids, Paul Ryan. Chris Christie was on fire. Ben Carson was up there, too. But it is very clear. Trump faces a huge challenge with minority voters. His hot, sometimes offensive talk on the campaign trail has angered many. This convention and many of his rallies are overwhelmingly white. We'll take it all on board this hour on Point, a diverse America and Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump. You can join us on air or online with this conversation is always on. What did you hear in the hall last night? Minority voters, what is Trump's message to you? What's yours for Donald Trump? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from the Convention Broadcast Center in Cleveland is Rosie Gray, political reporter for BuzzFeed. Rosie, great to have you here. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Henry Gonzalez, editor and publisher of the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. He's founder of the news website Politics in Stereo. Henry Gonzalez, great to have you here as well.
Great, good to be here.
Everybody was watching last night, everybody around here anyway, and many, of course, across the country. They jumped right on. Here was Chris Christie and more than Mitch McConnell going after Hillary Clinton. Guilty was his the crowd's verdict on a whole lot of fronts. And the message from the crowd, lock her up.
As to Hillary Clinton lying to the American people, is she guilty or not guilty?
Who's looking out for us? It's not Hillary.
There was a lot of lock her up in the hall last night. House Speaker Paul Ryan, who's been kind of cool on Donald Trump, was there. Didn't talk a whole lot about Donald Trump, but talked about a way of looking at the world and signs of life in the Republican Party.
Democracy is a series of choices. We Republicans have made our choice. Have we had our arguments this year? Sure we have. You know what I call those? Signs of life.
That knockdown dragout in the primary season, signs of life. Well, it was certainly very lively. And then there were the Trump kids, Tiffany and Donald Jr. this time, taking the stage. Here's a montage from CNN.
His true gift as a leader is that he sees the potential in people that they don't even see in themselves.
Whatever he does, he gives his all.
A president who will unleash the greatness in our nation. That president can only be my mentor, my best friend, my father, Donald Trump.
Rosie Gray, Nathan Gonzalez, you were watching last night. We're going to talk about Donald Trump and race and the vote in November, what he needs, what he doesn't, what he can get, what he doesn't, what he won't. How he may have changed American conversation about race. But Rosie, what did you see in that hall last night? Is it coming together?
You mean the party?
The party, the convention, the push for Donald Trump.
I mean, the party is trying to give the appearance of coming together, but I think anybody who was in there last night, you know, really, the vibe was not great. Mitch McConnell came out to nominate Mike Pence and was booed. Even up to the last second, there was talk of some sort of delegate revolt. This is not like a unified Republican Party. They're trying to kind of forge ahead, but those divisions, even if they're going to get papered over, are still there.
Nathan, I mean, there you had some big names. You had Paul Ryan standing up. You had Chris Christie punching hard and making some pretty strong points. Ben Carson, who, of course, was one of the challengers for the presidency himself up there. Talking about Lucifer and Hillary Clinton. It was kind of a out there, but nevertheless, you've got some big names on stage standing up for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think Governor Christie's speech was a good example of the tension within the party, meaning Governor Christie, people talk about him, maybe the attorney general under the Trump administration was sent there to prosecute the case against Hillary Clinton. And clearly the scripted line was, the call and response was, you know, he would give the call and they were supposed to respond
guilty.
But then there was the lock her up, which you played the tape on. That was not scripted, and I think that's the tension where everyone in that hall is against Hillary Clinton. Not everyone wants her to be in jail or go that far and use that type of rhetoric, and that's what I think the party's trying to balance in, like, keeping the more conservative or the more rabid Republicans at bay.
What is really taking hold in the hall? Is it, I mean, the platform is very, very conservative. Then you've got Donald Trump's people. I don't know if they're very, very conservative or very, very Donald Trump, who's kind of very, very unorthodox. Which do we see here? Is it Trump fervor that's saying lock her up, or is it something else, Rosie?
Well, one thing that you're seeing is that a lot of these speakers are more comfortable sort of, you know, as political people like to say, prosecuting the case against Hillary Clinton as opposed to giving a full-throated defense of Donald Trump. That actually does not go for Chris Christie, who is one of the first establishment Republicans to really embrace Donald Trump. But for other speakers like Mitch McConnell or Paul Ryan, what you're seeing is much more focus on sort of on anti-Clinton content, basically. In terms of the lock her up stuff, I mean, you know, Christie was getting the crowd going. And
they were primed. They were ready before he even really got there. They were locking her up before he could even really get started.
Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, you know, part of the point of he was supposed to be sort of the firebrand speech last night, you know, taking the fight to Clinton, and that's what he did. And, you know, these are, in a conservative crowd, Hillary Clinton is not a popular character, and you're going to see a lot of heightened emotions.
Of course, and then you've got the Trump children again. I mean, you had Melania the first night, and last night, Tiffany Trump and Donald Trump Jr. Tiffany Trump just out of college, 20, 21 years old, very poised in front of that great big audience, and I thought pretty effective in showing, conveying a more tender sense of her father, who can be pretty boisterous on the campaign trail.
Right. I think one of the criticisms is obviously the big criticism of Melania Trump's speech on Monday night, but there's also the criticism that there wasn't a lot of making Donald Trump personable. And I think both Tiffany and Donald Trump Jr. tried to put a little more meat on the bones with their speeches. And, you know, it's easy to say, I think they did a pretty good job. Ultimately, polling over the next few days after the convention will tell us, you know, whether they were effective with the American people.
I want to turn and begin to look at this issue of race and Donald Trump. I mean, he started right out of the gate with a tough attack on Mexicans coming over the border when he announced his candidacy. And he has maintained pretty tough language ever since. Republican Party has had a southern strategy and sometimes reached out for white identity politics for a long time. But this is maybe a new level of that with Donald Trump. Would you agree, Nathan?
I think with Donald Trump, it's tough to figure out what's calculated and what's just Donald Trump. And it's true. I mean, he has described illegal immigrants as kind of characterized them as criminals, rapists. He's done
gave a lot of time on the first night of the convention to mothers whose children had said been killed by illegal immigrants, and the crowd just went for that.
And if Donald Trump is known for one thing, it's the slogan "Make America Great Again" and the wall. I mean, that's the biggest thing, and that runs contrary to what the RNC and Republican Party has been trying to sort of rebuild, not the wall, but rebuild the ties with Hispanic. With Hispanic voters following the 2012 election.
I'm reading Paul Waldman in The Week, Rose. He says Republicans continued to stoke white identity politics when it was effective over the years, while on the other hand insisting they were becoming a diverse party. And, of course, there was a big push for that after the 2012 failure with Mitt Romney, with an appeal to anyone of any race. But he writes, but that balancing act became impossible once Donald Trump came rampaging through their party, winning an emphatic primary victory with a campaign based explicitly on bigotry and xenophobia. Tough words, a lot of tough words in the campaign, but do you know what he's talking about there, Rosie?
Well, I think what really happened with Donald Trump is that he kind of identified, and it's still not clear whether he just sort of intuited that this was what he should do or whether this was a real strategy, but he kind of identified a new coalition that had not really been spoken to in a long time. These sort of, you know, disaffected white working class people who are not necessarily very conservative, but really, really care about immigration, really care about trade. And he was really sort of the first candidate to, you know, Huckabee and Santorum in the past had kind of been sort of the first to, in recent years, to kind of really combine this sort of economic populism plus conservatism. Trump sort of took it to a new level and was extremely successful with it.
Economic populism and conservatism, but what about the race factor in here? You've got Paul saying bigotry and xenophobia.
Let me put it this way. I think that Trump does sort of make appeals to white racial resentment. And he certainly has countenanced, supporters who are explicitly white nationalist, or has not at least rejected them. I hesitate to really sort of say that he's explicitly trying to be xenophobic or bigoted.
You were out with white nationalists just a couple of months ago at a big meeting in Tennessee, I think. How are they feeling about Donald Trump?
Well, they're very excited. They feel as though this is the first major political candidate in a very long time who's really spoken to their concerns.
Well, I think what's kind of genius about the Make America Great Again slogan is that it has allowed people to they're drawn to Donald Trump for different reasons. I think there's an element of people who believe that making America great again means a less diverse America, going back to what maybe what they think America was a few decades ago. But there's also, you know, we need free trade. Free trade is hurting jobs and hurting the economy, and that's why the coalition has been difficult to break up. But I think it's been easy to characterize Republicans as they're nominating Donald Trump, they're all racist. But we have to remember that Donald Trump basically plowed through the primary with a plurality of voters, not a majority, but a plurality, up until there were no other candidates involved. And
what does that mean in terms of the charge of racial tinge, the fact that it was a plurality?
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, are there people motivated by racial politics in the Republican Party? I think there are, but I think it is a minority of the party rather than, you know, a part of the platform or a thread that's weaving through the GOP right now.
You follow the numbers. People are listening and they're paying attention. The latest poll I saw out of, I think, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, looking at black support for Donald Trump in two key swing states, Ohio and Pennsylvania. And the percentage of blacks ready to stand up and vote for Donald Trump or say they would support him was zero.
Zero.
What does that tell you? Zero.
Yeah. Well, when you're starting with 5 to 7, 8, 9% because of, you know, President Obama, there's not a further way to fall. But yeah, I mean, Republicans have a problem with non-white voters. I mean, that's absolutely clear.
To say the very least, in this election right now, in those swing states, 0% support. Nathan Gonzalez with the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. Rosie Gray with BuzzFeed. It's great to have you both right here in Cleveland. We're talking about the big speeches last night at the Republican National Convention and Donald Trump's challenge in reaching America's big minority vote. What his almost all-white rallies say about his campaign. I'm Tom Ashbrook in Cleveland. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention. We're talking this hour about all the speeches there last night, and we're looking at Donald Trump's challenge in reaching America's big minority vote. You look around, you see what's going on at this convention. Many of Donald Trump's rallies in the primary season, almost, not entirely, but almost all white. And what does that say about his campaign, the GOP, where this is all going? You can join us this hour. What do you think? Does Donald Trump not need the minority vote to win? Is he setting up a more divided country? Black, Latino voters, do you see a path to Donald Trump, to his message? Monday, first day of the convention, out in the streets, we heard a little bit of this. Inside the hall, quite a different tone. Daryl Glenn, African-American, El Paso County Commissioner, candidate for Senate. On Monday night, made his national debut, saying race relations have worsened under President Obama, who he called, in the convention hall, the divider-in-chief.
Mr. President, I have a message. This is not about black America, white America, or brown America. This is about the United States of America. You know, and quite frankly, somebody with a nice tan needs to say this. All lives matter.
Okay, but that's a loaded statement in this political season, and we know it. New York Times, page one today, piece saying, wow, you got black Republicans in the hall saying, hey, we don't want to be lectured from the lectern. Donald Trump himself, over the course of the convention, has had his moments, any number of them. On one, at least, House Speaker Paul Ryan called him out when Trump said Judge Gonzalo Curiel in Indiana couldn't give him a fair trial because of his Mexican background.
I disavow these requirements. I regret those comments that he made. I don't think claiming a person can't do their job because of their race is sort of like the textbook definition of a racist comment. I think that should be absolutely disavowed. It's absolutely unacceptable.
The textbook definition of a racist comment. And here we are. Donald Trump is the nominee. all the states standing up last night and bringing him right in. Rosie Gray is with us this hour, political reporter for BuzzFeed, with us here in Cleveland. Nathan Gonzalez, editor and publisher of the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. Star Parker joins us right now as well in Cleveland, conservative columnist, founder and president of the Center for Urban Renewal and Education. Republican, conservative, not a supporter of Donald Trump, if I've got that right. Star Parker, thanks very much for being here.
You're welcome.
And from Cleveland, not with us in the hall, but outside that fierce perimeter, our old friend Clarence Page, columnist and editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune, Pulitzer Prize winning for his commentary there. Clarence Page, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We're going to bring this right into the hall, but Clarence, what do you see going on with Donald Trump and race? I don't know if we call it the race card anymore, or it's just right out there as an issue. What have you seen in this primary season? What do you see now as he faces the big vote in November?
Well, coming into this primary season, I saw that the Republican Party is divided between two sets of strategies insofar as how to win the White House back. The establishment, as we've seen, has pushed for more diversity, for more outreach ever since their autopsy in 2012, or after the 2012 election loss.
Yep.
And the other group is more grassroots, more activists, Phyllis Schlafly and others who said, no, don't compromise your principles to reach out to diversity, dig deeper into the voters, the conservative voters who didn't turn out in 2012. That was especially true in Ohio. That was how Mitt Romney lost Ohio, because a lot of working class conservatives, white conservatives, stayed home. Donald Trump appears to be doubling down on that strategy, even though he's already clinched the nomination, you know, weeks ago. He's still just talking to the right wing, and I've seen that at this convention so far. And I feel sorry for Paul Ryan. I've been talking to him a lot in the last couple of years. He's been pushing heavily for more diversity, and he's been compromised now. He says, you know, I support our nominee, but I don't endorse him. That kind of a wobbly approach kind of shows how the leadership is confused at this point over what to do, and meanwhile, Trump is benefiting.
Clarence, is right-wing in this instance a euphemism for white? Is he digging into a right-wing vote or into a white vote?
Well, yeah, I've been searching hard. My editors in Chicago say, "So you know, are there any black delegates there?" And I've had a hard time finding them. But the two or three that I found,
18. Star Parker tells us here.
There we go.
The question stands:
Star.
What does right wing mean in this case? In Donald Trump's case. Clarence.
I'm sorry. I talked to a fellow from Houston last night, and he sounded very much like a lot of a very conservative border residents who say, you know, we got to stop all of these Mexicans from coming over and taking jobs from black folks. That was his spin on it. And that's what I also hear from a lot of other black conservatives, not all. And, I mean, Star Parker, you've got a great example there of someone who's been working very hard to build coalitions, et cetera. That's the kind of divide that I'm seeing in the party right now. And I think Donald Trump's candidacy is a big test. If he wins, then you see that philosophy, that strategy wins along with him. If he doesn't win, then the party has to be like it was back after the Goldwater loss in 64 and say, well, where have we gone wrong? What do we need to change?
Star Parker, you're conservative, and here you are sitting and watching this. Republicans have won white majorities, but substantial majorities in the race for the White House for a long time now,
right.
Sometimes by 20%, sometimes by significantly more. Do you see Donald Trump doubling down on that strategy here? We're looking at these latest numbers out of Ohio and Pennsylvania, 0% support among African Americans.
Right.
He's got people thinking about how to go after this, I guess. Is he doubling down on a color tinge strategy or a colorless strategy, a white strategy for victory?
I believe what we're looking at is making history to finally address some of the issues of concern over the last 50 years. Are we going to be biblical and free, or are we going to be secular and status? And when you look at Donald Trump's strategy and the frustration of those that in the country that get up on Sunday morning, go to church, and then Monday morning they go to work, and then they look at the other side of America that doesn't make those same life patterns, and then we've now gotten ourselves into $19 trillion of debt. While I am not a direct supporter of Donald Trump, I am supporter of the party that is expressing the worldview for freedom. And when you look at Donald Trump and his entrepreneurial instincts, I believe that we could have an opportunity, kind of like Pharaoh tapped Joseph, so that the people that Joseph represented could live free. Whether we are going to be able to get the black vote is an interesting question because a third of African Americans poll evangelical and conservative. And when you think about last night in the presentation of Donald Trump Jr. to mm-hmm. express very deeply his interest in school options and choice and mm-hmm. a understanding of how important education is, perhaps this is the election that all minority communities that are trapped in failing schools will listen to the two sides and start figuring out that the Democrats have not been in support of their interest. They are the ones that are trapping their children in these failing schools. So it'll be interesting. When you think about the race dynamic, is a majority of community that blue collar workers that get up on Sunday morning, go to church, and Monday morning go to work? Yeah, they're very frustrated. Well, absolutely.
But why aren't they standing up, at least in the polling so far, for Donald Trump?
No, I'm talking now about the white. The reason that you're seeing that white, because they're mad. I mean, let's face it.
Yes.
They've tolerated
no
for the last 30 years these affirmative action programs that have excluded them more often. They've looked at the political social engineering. They constantly hear from people like Al Sharpton that it's never enough. They look at the collapse of countries like Zimbabwe and say, okay, if you just go into 100% redistribution, your whole country collapses, and they've had enough of that. Now, will the black community understand that freedom is of their interest as well? Well, we are starting to see signs when you even think about some of the messengers from the platform. You know, we can look in the audience and say, well, only 18 became delegates. But when you look at the messaging on the stage, I'm very hopeful. I don't think that we're going to see Paul Ryan cave on the initiatives that he wants for entitlement reform and for welfare reform, initiatives that will set this country on the right track.
We get that you're conservative. Respect. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's your political view. But
right.
But what about just on the race front? I mean, listen with us for a second. Let's just listen back to a little bit of Trump time. Back to June when he declared his candidacy for the presidency. And, of course, that was where he talked, as you well know, Nathan and Rosie, about Mexico and Latin America and who's coming into the U.S.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting. And it only makes common sense.
Drugs, crimes, rapists, and that's, we've heard that again and again. Back
and
in November.
We'll hear it all the way again.
We'll hear
again,
it all
the way
through
to November.
Back in November, you had a Black Lives Matter protester pretty roughly removed from a Trump rally. Here's Trump responding on Fox News.
He was so obnoxious and so loud. He was screaming. I had 10,000 people in the room yesterday, 10,000 people. And this guy started screaming by himself. And they did, I don't know, rough up. Maybe he should have been roughed up.
And that brings a lot of things to mind when you talk about race. And one more, and we'll go to it. This was Trump in a CNN interview with Jake Tapper in February. He was asked to denounce the support of Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard David Duke.
Well, I have to look at the group. I mean, I don't know what group you're talking about. You wouldn't want me to condemn a group that I know nothing about. I'd have to look. If you would send me a list of the groups, I will do research on them. And certainly I would disavow if I thought there was something wrong. But you may have groups in there that are totally fine, and it would be very unfair. So give me a list of the groups, and I'll let you know.
Clarence Page, is Donald Trump provoking racism, more racially fired up attitudes in this country?
I put it more broadly than that. He's firing up xenophobia. It's not just race, but race is certainly a key factor that black folks look at, as well as other minorities, when they want to see, am I going to be fairly treated or not? I want to mention before I forget that John Kasich, governor of Ohio, mm-hmm. was reelected 2 years ago with 24% of the black vote. Just because you're Republican doesn't mean black folks aren't going to vote for you.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
Kasich, like numerous others around the country, know how on the local and state level to work with the black community. For Kasich, education was the big issue that really helped him to win black support. And we see this around on the country. Now, when Kasich and Trump were running against each other here in Ohio, you had Trump winning mostly because of the vote along the southern and eastern Appalachian part of the state. I'm an Ohio native, by the way. I know the state.
Yeah, yeah.
And the big cities and the more industrial part of Ohio, that's where Kasich won. And he won the state as a result of it. I think that's a microcosm of the country, as Ohio is a bellwether state so often is. And I see the whole country voting in that manner going into the fall. And with that in mind, Donald Trump's best friend is Hillary Clinton. And whatever mistakes she has made, Hillary Clinton's best friend is Donald Trump. And all the offenses that he has made against various groups of voters.
maybe driving voters to her. Rosie, we've talked for a long time about racial dog whistles in this country, but is it beyond dog whistle now? Is it explicit? Is there something right on the table?
Well, I think the Judge Curiel incident was certainly beyond a dog whistle. But I do think that was probably more extreme than... That may have been sort of the most extreme example yet, although I could be forgetting something. But I do think that Trump, whether knowingly or not, does, you know, from time to time, or even more frequently than that, sort of, like I was saying earlier, kind of just stoke these sort of angry white crowds in certain ways. And whether that's dog whistles or not, I don't know, but that is something that he sort of relies on, particularly in his big sort of stadium rallies.
I've seen plenty of it. Let's turn to our callers. Steve in Nellsville, Wisconsin. Steve, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Yes, thank you for having me. We the people think the main problem here is the rule of law is not being honored amongst everyone. The law, the Black Lives Matter, the rule of law is not being enforced at all. I mean, from Hillary all the way down to Black Lives Matters. When you holler kill whiteys and kill pigs, that's terrorist threats. They should be arrested on the spot and put in jail. I mean, the rule of law is not being honored, and these people are coming in this country illegally, bringing tons of cocaine and heroin across our borders. Our young
Steve, what about when you see the videos of police officers and black men being gunned down? That got a lot of people upset. How does it strike you?
Well, that's the blacks are demanding justice too. The police ain't even enforcing the law. I told my son, if you're going to be a police officer, you sure as heck better arrest that officer if he violates the law right then and there. I mean, the police ain't enforcing the laws on themselves. They run amok with corruption and greed because their fellow officers ain't enforcing the law on their own.
Leave you with Donald Trump or against Donald Trump, Steve? Where do you stand on Trump?
He says he's going to be the president of the law. He's going to enforce the law in all areas.
It sounds like you're for it. Steve, we've got it from Wisconsin. One more from Chris in Des Moines, Iowa. Chris, you're on the air.
You know, the thing is with Mr. Trump, he has that racist mindset. And by having that racist mindset, it's going to be hard for people of color to come over onto his side.
What makes you say he has a racist mindset? What do you mean? How do you know that?
Well, it's just the things that he says. You just look at the things that he says, how he talks about people of color. It shows he has that racist mindset.
But he says, I'm quoting him here somewhere. He says, I like the blacks. I like the Hispanics.
You can say that. Saying something is one thing, but your actions is another. And so his actions, rally, and his rallies were more like Klan rallies.
I did not say that. They are quite white, but I don't know about Klan rally, but okay.
May I interject?
But at his rally when the African-American person was jumped on, he should have either stopped it. But he did not stop it. He's saying he incited, beat him up.
And maybe he ought to be roughed up. Yeah, Chris, we've got it, Star.
There is concern, as has been pointed out on these callers, that we're in a dilemma. Do you want a heavy hand of government to bring this law and order, or do you pull toward the moral thread, the discussions that even Abraham Lincoln had before we ended up in a civil war? We are divided. We're divided in many fronts, and race is one of those fronts. So question,
Donald Trump says he wants law. He doesn't talk that much about a moral thread. He talks about law.
Exactly. No, he wants law and order. Absolutely. Yeah. So
the moral thread is one of your big
themes. So what we have to do is, when assessing what African-Americans are going to do, is look at what that means to say, I am the law and order president, or I will be that law and order president if that's going to fare well for them. So the balance on the issues, the jury is still out. We don't know what is going to happen. Most people are alarmed by the rhetoric that has come out of his mouth over the last year. But now he's the candidate of the party who has a platform rooted in freedom. And that's why the uncertainty is certainly on the rise for what these minority communities will do. Because it is an absolute fact that Barack Obama won the election with only 38% of the white vote.
Yep.
I'm not sure that those that are up next to Donald Trump understand these dynamics and how important these minority communities have become.
Star Parker, conservative columnist with me here in Cleveland, Ohio, at the Republican National Convention. Please stand by. Nathan Gonzalez, when we come back, I'm going to ask you if he can win by digging more deeply into that white vote, if he can call out enough to overcome the demographic trend, which is the other way in this country. Clarence Page in Cleveland, great to have you with us. Rosie Gray, political reporter for BuzzFeed, so great to have you with us this hour. Thank you so much for coming by. This is On Point.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century. Forget about digging through stacks of paperwork. This completely online process lets you safely share your bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button. Using a phone or tablet, you can get approved for purchase or refinance in just a few minutes. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention, and we're looking today at Donald Trump's challenge in reaching America's big minority vote. Big and bigger every presidential election for some years now. We're looking at what his almost all-white rallies say about his campaign, his view of the world where he would take the country. Star Parker is with us, conservative columnist and founder and president of the Center for Urban Renewal and Education, with us here in Cleveland. Also, Nathan Gonzalez, editor and publisher of the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. Clarence Page is with us from Cleveland as well, columnist, editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune. You can join us. What are you seeing from Cleveland, from Donald Trump, when it comes to America's diversity? When Trump says he's for the little guy, is it the little guy of all colors? And does Trump take us forward or back or sideways on race? Outside the convention hall this week, well, they weren't so happy on this front. Here you go.
Donald Trump, go away! Racist, sexist, anti-gay!
Donald Trump, go away!
Donald Trump, not too flustered by that. Here he is talking with Bill O'Reilly and saying, look, on race, the issue, on all this, the issue is jobs.
What's your message to African Americans?
My message is I'm going to bring jobs back, Bill.
Jobs.
My message is
okay.
I'm bringing jobs back to the country. And they're going to have jobs because right now we don't have jobs.
But some of those who have been hit along the way and look at Donald Trump see something really divisive going on here. Marco Rubio really swung out at him when things were getting pretty tough. This is back in March, the Florida senator saying Trump reminded him of a third world dictator fanning flames and could rip the country apart.
This is what happens when a leading presidential candidate goes around feeding into a narrative of anger and bitterness and frustration. And I think we all need to take a step back and ask ourselves, are we contributing to this? Because if this continues, this country will continue to be ripped apart at the seams.
And jobs, yes, jobs. But maybe it's more than that as well. Republican Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. Here he was talking last Wednesday on the Senate floor about discrimination he has experienced as a black man. Talked about being stopped 7 times by law enforcement officers in a year while an elected official.
I simply ask you this. Recognize that just because you do not feel the pain, the anguish of another, does not mean it does not exist. To ignore their struggles, our struggles, does not make them disappear.
African-American U.S. Senator Tim Scott. Nathan Gonzalez, what about the numbers? So far, Donald Trump has done very well with a white vote. How deeply can he dig into that? What can he pull out? You know, we've seen what the percentage of the white percentage of the electorate has gone from like 88% to 80% to 74 or so, and people are saying maybe only 70% in this election. We know where the demographic trend is. What can he pull out of the white category in November?
Right. So let's take a little bit of brief historical. In 2008, President George W. Bush reelected with 44% of the Hispanic vote. Now, I think that just shows that Republicans don't need to win minority voters. They just can't get crushed with minority voters. Now, Mitt Romney in 2012 won 27% of the Hispanic vote. I think a lot of Republicans thought that was the floor. Mm-hmm. Then Donald Trump comes along in the June NBC News Wall Street Journal poll Only 22% of Hispanics polled in that survey had a favorable opinion of Donald Trump. So that's what there's concern. Now, when you look at the electoral map, the challenge for the Republicans is that some of the states with growing Hispanic communities, such as Colorado and Florida, are two of the pure toss-up states. And so if those states are moving off the table for the GOP presidential nominee, that means other states have to come online in order to win. That's states like Pennsylvania. It makes Ohio a must-win, maybe Michigan, Wisconsin. But
he's doing fairly well in Ohio. We had we've had poll analysts on the show saying, look, he may take it.
Right, and he could. I mean, he
is
could.
That with a white vote? Saw he's got 0% in the polling among African Americans.
States that are more white, but they're also shrinking. I mean, when you look at the long-term trend, Democrats are doing better or set up to do better with minority voters in states that are growing in the West and the Southwest. Whereas if Republicans are doubling down in the Rust Belt in the Midwest, those states are losing population. They're going to lose electoral votes after the next round of census, the next census in 2020. And it just makes it a very narrow path for any Republican presidential nominee if the trend continues.
Phil in Wakefield, Rhode Island. Phil, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. Thank you so much. Honored to be with you. So some of your guests were suggesting earlier that race is somehow a peripheral issue in the election, or that race is some of the reason that some people are supporting Trump. I disagree with that. I think race is the central issue of this election. I think we're in a reactionary moment right now where working-class white folks are feeling betrayed by both parties and are feeling their minor privileges that we have had challenged by the Black Lives Matter movement, by the immigration rights movement, by the LGBTQ rights movement, and are reacting and because the challenges to their privilege is uncomfortable. And I think that that's the biggest factor in the support for Trump.
If Phil, when Black Lives Matter goes in the streets and says, we want justice, does that have to be a challenge to white voters?
It doesn't have to be, but that's how white voters, I mean, I'm white myself. That's how a lot of white voters view that. That's how a lot of my friends view that, because we've become accustomed to this privilege. And when you're accustomed to privilege, equality feels like oppression. It feels like our position is being challenged, and there's a fear of going from the second rung of the socioeconomic ladder down to the bottom rung of the socioeconomic ladder, and that fear is a motivating factor for folks who are supporting Trump.
Phil, I really appreciate your call. Equality can feel like oppression. Clarence Page, do you agree with our caller? Are we in a reactionary moment?
Well, I think you have a very articulate and knowledgeable caller there. I would only quibble with whether racism or the race issue is central, because after he said that, he said that people are upset over the job situation, over the economy, over the sense that things are falling apart, that the world that they knew is no longer here, and if they were privileged and didn't know it, and I get emails like this all the time, where's my privilege? I work for a living, blah, blah, blah. That just doesn't register except as some kind of oppression that somebody is out to get what I've got, and that creates more division. You've got many Republicans saying that races are more divided under Obama. I think the races are more aware under Obama. Before we had a black president, a lot of people could just not think about race and not have it touch their thinking, whereas now they find themselves forced to think about it. They don't like it, and I feel like, hey, welcome to my world, because I've been with it all my life.
Yeah, Star Parker, one more call. I'll bring it to you. Ronald in Abilene, Texas. Ronald, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
How you doing, Tom?
Very well.
First thing I'd like to say, thank you, good. The first thing I'd like to say is this, that the whole concept that they're just saying Black Lives Matter is adverse to all other lives matter is nonsense. What the Black Lives Matter movement is really should have said, I guess, is Black Lives Matter too, with two O's, or Black Lives Matter also, and because they're acting like there's some kind of controversy between Black Lives Matter, so that means my lives don't matter. No, that's just the opposite of what Black Lives Matter means. It means Black Lives Matter too.
Okay. Yeah, we get it, and I'm sure that's what I understand it to mean, that, Ronald. And yet there's a pretty rough, rugged response to it from some. You heard from the stage here in Cleveland on Monday night, you know, just don't say that. Just say all lives matter. Now, of course, all lives matter. But how do you interpret it when people say, don't say Black Lives Matter, say all lives matter? How does that ring to you?
That, to me, is the racist key. That's that you know, racist keywords. I honestly believe this, mm-hmm. to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
If the South ever forgives Lyndon Baines Johnson for the Civil Rights and Voting Acts and all that, then the Republican Party becomes irrelevant in the United States of America. It, you know.
You mean if it gets over the race issue?
Yes, get over it. That's the big thing that they've been using to hold these really three different groups together. They've been holding Eastern businessmen, white conservatives, and then the white working class, which is really a disparate group when you think about politics.
Yeah.
Well, Trump took the working class white man out of it, and so now you got the conservative right, you have the business people. I mean, they don't know what to do, but Trump really just took that, pretty much that racist white guy from them. And so when they look at it and they say, well, we see him as racist, well, yeah, we do. When you look at things like Red Map.
Yeah, Ronald, I've got it. But, I mean, right here at the Republican convention, Trump is the Republican candidate now. So took it from them. Who's them and who's the Republicans? I mean, he is the GOP candidate as of right now. Star Parker, after the 2012 elections, there was all this soul-searching, and the Republican Party leadership that Donald Trump has come on in a kind of insurgent challenge to and is now victorious as of last night, formally, they said we've got to expand the diversity of Republican support or we are doomed long-term. Do you see that happening, or is this a turn back the other way?
This is a turn back the other way, and that's why you see it very difficult for Republican leadership to embrace this candidate. He tapped into a frustration that some of the callers are pointing out. He tapped into a frustration that was hidden for so long, and now he has become the candidate. As a result, the Republicans had 17 people on that stage, and he was able to move in with his sports car, if you will, around all of the traffic.
This must be so frustrating for you, Star. Here you are, a proud African-American conservative, and the bus is kind of moving the other way.
Well,
on racial terms.
On racial terms, perhaps, but this might be a window of opportunity to take it out of those racial terms, which is the dynamic that the liberals have led us into, and start talking about the issues that are concerning to all people, not just to white people and or black people. The Black Lives Matter campaign, although it is heavily funded by a liberal hardcore left that has an agenda to destroy this country, there are legitimate concerns in this community that the other side that demands, as you're saying, to say all lives matter, do not want to sit down and take the time to understand and try to fix what is broken down as our country to be a united front. When you ask the original question, can he win with this strategy? Goldwater tried it, Nixon tried it. Can he win with this strategy? I don't know. The jury's still out, because most of the data, as Nathan was pointing out, show us that 5 million people, Barack Obama won with 5 million votes.
Mm-hmm.
Only 3 million of these whites didn't come out. So where are they? If they brought out all of those whites that didn't vote with Romney, where do they get that extra 2 million votes? This is a very critical question on the table, because although we can look at national polls and say, well, he's winning, and you guys should just shut up and go back to your corner, when you get into these states and these pockets, how long do Republicans cross their fingers and hope that the cities don't turn out? They're turning out. And what's happening right now, the black vote has always, right now, currently, is that about 74% of registered blacks come to the polls, and they will always come to the polls.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening now is that Latino vote that traditionally didn't come to the polls, about half of the Latino community that is eligible to register and vote didn't. And now they're registering in droves. And I really think that it's going to have an impact in November that might not be anticipated by the Trump campaign.
I mean, Nathan, we've got to Hector Tobar, the writer, writing today that the Trump convention has begun by slandering an entire generation of border crossers, bringing back to mind the crimes and the mothers they put on stages. They came and they murdered my son. And he's saying, look, the millions have come across, yes, but overwhelmingly they've not been murdering people in the U.S. And he sees a big, long-tail consequence for the Republican Party, not just Donald Trump, and that Hispanic alienation.
Right. I mean, if the population trends are clear, the population trends are not going to change. And so if the electoral trends continue, then the Republican Party, the math eventually is not going to work. And that's not just at the presidential level. I mean, just take this cycle, some of the key Senate states that are in play. The only two real opportunities for Republicans to take over a Senate seat are in Nevada and Colorado, growing Hispanic populations. You have Marco Rubio up for re-election in Florida, John McCain up for re-election in Arizona. And Senator McCain has said that he's concerned about the dynamic that Star was talking about with really motivating these Latino voters to come to the polls. And, you know, the Republican Party eventually is going to have to change. And I just want to make one other point that there was an... I think a majority of the Republican Party is ready to embrace a minority candidate. I mean, when you look at like Tim Scott is a rock star in the Republican Party. Go back to J.C. Watts. I think there was an opportunity for Dr. Ben Carson. It's just I don't think he reached the threshold of credibility to become president of the United States.
But look at all these minorities who were here at the last Republican convention who are not on the agenda at all this time. Nikki Haley, Brian Sandoval, Susana Martinez, Tim Scott, Marco Rubio, Mia Love, none of them speaking here. They were all here in 2012. Elaine in Medina, Ohio. Elaine, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say that I think I live in near Akron, Ohio, and I'm a Democrat, but I find that the racism has been undercover for a while. I know it's there. But what I've noticed is there's a sort of a civil acceptance right now that you can be rude to black people and it's okay in public. And that really discourages me because I think that's come out of the Trump campaign. The other thing is put a bumper sticker for Clinton around here and you'll get honked at and you'll get, you know, razzed at through the window. It's a very, in a violent way, scary. I'm not afraid to be shot, but I tell you, I'm afraid that somebody's going to, you know, hurt me somehow over who I stand for and what I stand for. And I think it's the Trump campaign that's caused that.
Elaine, I really appreciate your call from Medina. Clarence Page, what ground are we on here in terms of race, race relations, and where Donald Trump may have to go to try and win in November, where he may go?
We're in the middle of the swirling winds of change right now, and that unsettles everybody, especially when different factions speak with different language to each other. My biggest quarrel with Black Lives Matter is the name of the organization. And it's not an organization. It is a movement like the Tea Party and others. But it's got the kind of name that's easy for enemies to demonize. And this is not new. I remember after Barry Goldwater, after the Civil War, which was the same year the Civil Rights Act was passed in 64, you had the beginning of a massive wave of white backlash that brought us George Wallace and the Hart hats, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, we had urban riots in the country. So Tom, I've seen worse. That was worse at that time. But
this
is bad now with enough tragedies of police officers being killed, of innocent people in the streets being killed. We've got to get through this. I think the country is resilient. We will survive, but it's going to take real leadership, not just yelling at each other.
I've seen worse is not exactly what we wanted to be hearing in 2016, but here we are. Clarence Page with the Chicago Tribune in Cleveland. Thanks so much for joining us, Clarence.
Thank you.
Star Parker, you're terrific. Thank you so much for coming in. The Center for Urban Renewal and Education, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Nathan Gonzalez with the Rothenberg and Gonzalez Political Report. Great to have you right here, Nathan. Thanks for joining us. Listeners, thanks for joining us. Great to have you as well from Cleveland at the Republican National Convention. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.